Afternoon. Please be seated.
The United States District Court is now in session. The Honorable Timothy S. Hellman presiding. Today is August 9th, 2007, in the case of Three Angels versus Galen Arthur Joy, et al., civil action number 07-40098, FPS. Counsel, please identify yourself for the record.
Your Honor, Jerry Hayes of Siegel Grill Group, near Duffy and Foster.
Afternoon. Nice to put a face with the name.
Your Honor, Joe Duffy with Siegel Grill.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Attorney Rebecca Richards with Pierce, Pucci, and Kane.
Good afternoon to you, Ms. Richards. Good afternoon to you. How about the other half of the V here?
Your Honor, I'm Derek Heal, appearing for Robert Keppel.
Afternoon, Mr. Heal.
Galen Arthur Joy, pro se, sir.
Good afternoon to you. And who's this individual here that's on the screen?
That's Mr. Pickle.
Oh, okay. Mr. Pickle? Can you hear me, sir?
I can hear you. Could be a little louder.
Let me see what we can do. Can you see me?
I cannot see.
It's not a bad thing. How about now? What you get. Okay. See if we can get a volume. Good right there. Okay. Who's Ms. Hayes, are you going to be the principal spokesperson?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Mr. Joy and Mr. Heal, I'll let you fend for yourselves here. Here's what I propose to do. Since you are the entity that is looking for the mirror image of the drive, I'm going to ask you to make a brief, but for lack of a better word, opening, about why you need it and, you know, what you intend to prove to me today. And then maybe, Mr. Heal, I'll let you respond, and Mr. Joy, you as well. And then we will call witnesses and see what we can do. Mr. Pickle is right in the middle of everything, so I'm not sure how this is going to work out, but let's keep moving, and then if you get in the way, Mr. Pickle, we'll have to move you around to another spot, but we'll see what happens here. Ms. Hayes, why don't you tell me a little bit about why you are seeking to have a mirror image of the drive and what you have accomplished so far?
Well, Your Honor, pursuant to your directive during our telephone conference previously, we did get together by telephone with the defendants and their experts and attempted to resolve this. I want to first start off by saying that we are not here as part of the scope of discovery conference. As I'm sure you're aware, Judge Saylor sort of advanced this so that we could all try to figure out a data management system to deal with materials that are produced once discovery is served, once we sort of get that far down the line. So this is really nothing more than a discovery management portion of what came out of the 26F and 16 conferences. We are looking for access to the original documents in the manner and the format in which they are traditionally kept. Now, a couple of reasons that this is important. First of all, we're looking for all data that is attached to and part of electronically stored information. That includes things like metadata, information like the creation date of documents, no matter what the actual hard date happens to be, information about all of the parties that may have received an email, people included in the blind carbon copy that might not otherwise be printed on a copy, or even show up on a data copy that's produced in a CD-ROM. We're also looking for information such as erasures, previous versions of documents that were changed or redacted, edited, or otherwise altered. All that information is important because we're dealing here with a defamation case and a trademark infringement case. And when it comes down to it, some of the important facts are going to be how did the defendants use 3ABN's trademarked nominer? Second of all, in terms of the defamatory statements, when were they made, to whom were they made, how were they published, when were they published, and who received them as part of that publication. Because all of that information can be secretly, if you will, attached to documents that are electronically stored in their native format, and then that information is not translated to the material when it is burned onto a CD-ROM or a DVD and provided to counsel, it is important to have original access to that. Now, it's not just that we want to find the information and get our hands on the information because it's a relevant part of the case, but the federal rules also provide that we're entitled to access the data in its original format. If we were dealing with a business, we would be allowed on a deposition for inspection and production to go into the office, walk up to the file cabinet, open the drawer, look at the red rope, look at the documents and the order in which they're maintained, the post-it notes that might be attached, the documents that might be stapled to the back. We would be then allowed to copy and take materials from that production that were relevant to our case, obviously. What we are asking to do is the electronic equivalent of walking into the office and looking into the file cabinet. We are not looking for copies of the documents to be handed to us in the middle of the street. We are looking to go into the native format where the information is maintained, get the information in the form, in the order, and in the manner that it is archived, that we can have that information.
How do you propose to do that?
We do have a computer expert here from Computer Forensic Services out of the Twin Cities. Mark Landman is his name, and Mark is willing to discuss with the court the protocols and procedures that he typically uses in dozens and dozens of cases similar to this in state and federal court. The procedure we've tried to explain to the defendants is a procedure whereby confidentiality of the records is absolutely maintained. The experts from Mark's firm are required to sign confidentiality agreements before they even access the materials. Second of all, the materials that they can produce to any party, including the party that retains them, is subject to a very strict search protocol that the parties must agree to before it's engaged. As Mark can better explain to you, he can take the documents and divide them up into relevant documents versus non-relevant documents before any of the materials are even produced to even our side of the case, let alone produced to defendants. The information can be, he can access the hard drive with the defendants present. They can supervise the access. It will not require shutting down the technology. We are not asking to close the website for 2 weeks so that we can do this. It's a relatively short and simple process. And quite frankly, the federal rules, particularly the amendments in December of 06 concerning e-discovery, give us the presumption that as long as we are willing to bear the costs and we are willing to bear the inconvenience of obtaining the data, we should have a right to access it in that format.
So, is making a mirror image of the hard drive the methodology that I'm going to hear about, or is it going to be just he wants to go in and knock around?
No, Your Honor, this is definitely not what you would call a fishing expedition. Although I have to say I sort of hate that term because all discovery is a fishing expedition. The question is, are you going into it with a very specific bait or are you going into it with a stick of dynamite? We plan here to go into it with very specific lures, if you will. We know exactly the kind of information that we're looking for. And by sitting down with opposing counsel and determining mutually agreeable search terms that will help Mark before any of the data is produced,
is he going to make a mirror before he does that search?
Yes.
Is that okay?
The mirror image is made first. Then an index is made, then the parties are allowed to do it, and then they receive the materials.
Thank you very much.
Certainly.
Mr. Hill?
Thank you, Your Honor. And I have to say again that my sister referred to metadata. That's a trademarked term of the Metadata Corporation. I know it also appears in the Sedona Principles. It has no place in computer science and as a term of art. It's just, a term that's completely misapplied. What these people are looking for is published information. Defamation, trademark, copyright, things that are mispublished. Yet they somehow think that they should go look in the computer for private information. Something that someone typed and then, oh, I didn't mean that. I never sent it out. I deleted it. But the way word processors work, they will keep a stream of undue information. It'll be stashed off in a place in the hard disk. And a stream of it might be left around in some remnant of the leaked file. I'm sure this court doesn't know the way the data is organized or data are organized on hard disks. But there's an immense amount of strings of disconnected bytes. And by looking for deleted information, for looking for information that hasn't quite made it out of the computer, that's just what they're looking for. They want to reach into the mind of the defendant and see what he's thinking, or what he mistyped, or who knows what. And that's not what this case is about. This case is about published information. Mr. Pickle has on his computer proprietary information, information that we could disclose to the court in camera, but even a third party such as quite possibly even a bonded discovery expert, you have to go back to each of the people that own that information, obtain their release. He's got almost 3,000 customers with their credit card numbers and similar information on his hard disk. During the telephone conference, I talked with a different man, Matt Wrench, Rush, but Grinny. And I described a situation where possibly the defendants could make the mirror image look and determine what was confidential and not really the property of Mr. Pickle, and zero out those sectors and pass it on. And from a technology standpoint, that appeared to work. But more importantly, there's no reason to go fishing in these computers when we've already disclosed all the data that's on the computer. We gave them, Mr. Joy submitted two CDs and I put it on one DVD. Everything that, it was about 800 megabytes. And that was, in addition to the initial disclosure, which wasn't an electronic form. And it's very surprising to me that these plaintiffs are coming and asking you for access to our computers when their disclosures that they send out indicate that they don't have any electronic data that is responsive to discovery. There's no electronic data that they said is going to be used in any, claim to prove any claim or to support any defense. All they said that they would offer as data that was responsive to the disclosure were hard copies. This follows the agreement in our phone conference that we would exchange data on the CD format. And my sister wrote me a letter yesterday and said, well, that was only if we had data for these folks. The plaintiffs are really, they're coming here asking for the world and saying, we don't have to give you an inch. She said that they're not going to shut down the computers. That's incorrect. When I asked the expert what technology they were going to use, it involved the Linux operating system, which is now what these computers are running. It would necessarily involve turning the computer off and running foreign software on the computers, which, again, anybody who knows anything about technology knows that that's a terrible security risk. It might be possible if the source code of the tool were made available and it were compiled, by the defendants. They would have a certain certainty that it was the binary that was going to be run. But it's like putting a virus on your computer. Furthermore, the idea that the data should be turned over to a third party who would be paid by the plaintiffs and then would promise to keep it confidential, that's similarly, not something Mr. Pickle is comfortable with. And I should mention at this time, Mr. Pickle does write websites and, he's fairly knowledgeable in the use of computers. Certainly knows enough to make a mirror image of his hard disk, as he was requested to do at the beginning of the case, simply to get an archival copy. And there's no reason to go to the computers except for harassment. There are already archival copies of me. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Joy, do you want to chime in at all?
If I may, I ask if the court recognizes this.
I do.
If the court
court recognizes the Sedona principles, and very simply put, the request on the part of the plaintiffs in this matter clearly exceeds any of the principles applied in this particular case. The fact is that what we're going to do...
Let me just say that the newly amended rules, which were amended effective December 1st of 06, while they and I put great store in the Sedona principles, the rules do contemplate the discussion that we are having right now. And I appreciate that the Sedona principles may not go as far as the newly amended rules do, so I should probably give you that caveat before we continue. I listened to Ken Withers speak 2 weeks ago, and he spoke for a couple of hours about native format. So we've been spending time on it.
The fact is that based on Sedona, we've actually already produced them in the native format. The way I read the rule, if there's something missing, then frankly that does go to the issue of scope of discovery, and they can at that point have to actually request that through an appropriate request for the information. Under the circumstances, I would invoke, obviously, the Sedona principles as the foundation here. I don't see any, you know, they have not provided any evidence to the court that anything that we have provided at this point is insufficient. We've gone overboard, I believe, to make sure that an appropriate copy, if you will, of the information found in the computer and the backup drive were appropriately transferred and copied to the CD so that they would have as close as possible an image of exactly what we had in our computer. And I see no foundation in Sedona for them to require this byte by byte that they're insisting on having. It's obviously invasive. It goes way beyond the principles. It really goes beyond principles of discovery, to be frank with you, because frankly they haven't asked for a single thing yet. I would also point out that Sedona very clearly makes clear that it's inappropriate to treat a civil case as if it was a crime scene. And that's effectively what this gentleman is trying to do. He wants to come in and act as a forensic specialist here. And I think what we will successfully demonstrate this afternoon is the proposal he's made for the safety, if you will, of specific sectors in the hard drive is not in fact safe at all. That work product is going to be easily accessible to him. Totally inappropriate. That correspondence between myself and Mr. Hill, for example, would be absolutely accessible to him. I don't think that's appropriate. And then on top of that, I have a similar situation. I've been a loan officer for a number of years. On the one computer that I have my 3ABN documentation on, I happen to have 264 applications from a variety of people throughout the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. In addition to that, I obviously have the credit reports that go with those clients. And on top of that, I have a lot of other documentation. Okay? For them to come in, it is very possible, from what we understand, that in fact, any type of terms they could use could end up moving into sectors that they clearly would not be entitled to. And it just reeks of moving way beyond the principles in the Sedona conference, not only in the premise that it's an issue of over-invasiveness, but I would read number 9. A responding party should not be required to observe, review, or produce deleted, shadowed, and or fragmented or residual electronically stored information. We've actually provided a copy of the information that they need. They have not demonstrated any way, shape, or form that we have not appropriately provided information according to the Sedona principles. Let's see, in addition to that, I noted that principle number 7, the requesting party has the burden on a motion to compel to show that the responding party steps to preserve and produce relevant electronically stored information was inadequate. think those principles are pretty clear. I think they're moving beyond those principles. In addition, when you get to the issue of form, which seems to be their special concern here, it's very clear in Principle 12, the absent party agreement of court order specifying the form of forms of production. Production should be made in forms of forms in which the information is ordinarily maintained or in a reasonably usable form, taking into account the need to produce reasonably accessible metadata that will enable the receiving party to have the same ability to access, search, and display the information on the producing party, where appropriate or necessary in light of the nature of information in the either case. And we've done that. That's my assertion. We've already auto-discovered. We've met the principles of Sedona, and what they're requesting really goes way beyond that. Goes to the issue of scope of discovery, in fact. Let's see, there's another one I'd like to make. Sedona's principles reflect limits. Well, let me just read the summary here. Responding parties are best situated to evaluate the appropriate procedures, methodologies, and technologies to preserve and produce their electronically stored information. Now, we've gone through very carefully our entire hard drive and backup system. We have produced virtually everything. Documents, we've produced an entire history of emails dating back to, pardon me, August of 2006, when I first became involved in this case. And I think, again, we have met the requirements of the principle.
Is the information that you all provide on the two CDs and the DVDs, is it still available in its native format?
Well, it would be an exact mirror image of what was stored inside of the...
And it's still inside you, it's still in your hard drive, on your hard
absolutely.
Drive?
Absolutely. Absolutely stored your
drive. You did?
Well, these were copies of files.
Okay, and so nothing's been deleted?
Of course nothing's been deleted, and an archival copy was taken, because these are computers used in the reference course of business. And even to save a new copy of a file, you save it in one spot and delete the old one.
Thank you. That answers. Thank you very much, Mr. Joy.
Okay.
Ms. Hayes, you may call your first witness.
Yes, Your Honor. I'll call Mark Letterman.
All right. Sir, if you could come right up here. I'm trying to think what we got to do with Mr. Pickle here.
Thanks.
Can we move in?
Can you move it over here?
I can. But do you want to fix this or fix it?
No, he can watch. Okay. All right. So right there, right on the witness stand. Please. You can take that microphone, too, because it's just going to fall right off. Somebody give her a hand.
Yes.
You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so I'll be back.
I do.
Have a seat.
Good Mr. Linderman, could you please introduce yourself to the court, telling your name and giving us your address, please?
Yes. Good afternoon. My name is Mark Lanterman, L-A-N-T-E-R-M-A-N. My business address is 601 Carlson, C-A-R-L-S-O-N, Parkway, Suite 630, Minnetonka, that's M-I-N-N-E-T-O-N-K-A, Minnesota, 55305.
I don't want to waste a lot of the court's time with background, but I would like you to provide just a sketch of your educational and employment background, please.
Certainly.
Can you stand up? Thank you.
I have a undergrad and graduate degree, both in computer science. I spent 11 years in law enforcement, 3.5 years assigned to the U.S. Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force as their senior computer forensic expert.
Right. I'd like to begin by talking about this idea of native format and the native manner in which data is maintained. Could you please talk a little bit about the importance of native format and what you can find from native format information?
Certainly. I can best do that by briefly, very briefly, explaining what metadata really is. Metadata, if you think of it like this, every electronic file, every electronic document has two layers of information associated with it. The first layer is the content. It's if you were to print that document out, what would come out of the printer? The second layer of information is the metadata. That can include the name of the file. When was that file truly created? When was it last accessed? When was it last modified? How long did someone work on that? What user account last saved or printed the document? Was the document deleted? If so, when? And so it's that second tier of information that is most valuable. And I think I answered your question, but it's most important to not only examine electronic files in their native original format, but also to have them collected in a proper way that does not affect or alter this underlying metadata.
Mr. Linderman, one of the things that counsel has discussed is the fact that making a bit-for-bit or a mirror image of a hard drive is like installing a virus on a computer. Could you address that concern?
Yeah, that is not the case. The process of creating it's actually referred to as a bitstream or byte-for-byte image, does not install anything on the hard drive. It doesn't change the original evidence at all. First thing I was taught was rule number one, don't do anything to change the evidence. So no software is installed on the subject hard drives at all, and in fact we use hardware write blockers to prevent even an inadvertent write to the hard drive.
Right. The idea of having to turn the computer off or shut down the system for a while, can you explain in terms of the protocol how that's done and what's involved in accessing the data?
Certainly. Well, it certainly depends on what kind of system is being preserved. Typically, servers, we do not shut down. However, individual laptops or desktops, the computers are shut down during the imaging process, which typically takes maybe an hour or two. It just depends on the capacity of the hard drive.
Is there any particular time of the day that the image needs to be made, or can it be made at any point?
No, it can be made at any time.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the protocol that you use for capturing the data, inventorying it, and then providing it to the parties as part of production. Could you explain that protocol and what goes into it, please?
Certainly. And let me just explain for the court. Over the past 5 years, I've been involved in 967 cases, and we use the same protocol in every single case. We don't deviate from the protocol. The first step is to create a bitstream image of the device. That's an evidentiary copy. At that point, I am typically given a list of search terms by one or both parties, things to look for. We do that. And in cases similar to this, what we typically do and which generally agreed upon is once I complete my work, once I finish my searches and I identify the responsive documents to the given search terms, my work product goes to the other side to review for responsiveness and relevancy. I typically don't give any of my work product to the law firm or corporation who actually has retained me. And that way, both sides are assured that the evidence is properly preserved.
In search terms, do you do that through optical character recognition, or what's the...
Yes, what I do, it's actually considered GREP. It's a GREP, G-R-E-P. And what that means is I'm given either a list of search terms or a set of search rules, meaning, for instance, I want all documents that contains the word contain the word insurance within 5 words of renewal. So it just depends on what I'm asked to search for.
Now, it sounds to me as though that the search terms are not part of what you put together. How is that typically done in your experience with the parties involved?
Sure. Well, typically the parties work together to generate a list of search terms. Once they have agreed upon this list of search terms, I will often look at it and make some additional recommendations. Meaning that if I recognize a search term that is likely to produce a number of false hits, I'll identify that for the parties and ask them to reconsider that specific term. But if the search terms are fairly unique, there typically is no reason for me to get involved in anything having to do with the generation of the search term list.
Would you consider such a search a scientific test?
Would I consider this?
I'm asking because I have a pornography case on, that I have a discovery issue on, and the issue is whether or not it's a scientific test. It has nothing to do with you folks, I'm happy to say.
I think it would depend. It should be done in such a way that that another forensic person should be able to duplicate my findings exactly. So to that point, I would say yes.
Thank you.
But it does take some skill. So.
Now, one thing that was mentioned was an archival copy. Could you explain if and if there is what it entails, if there's any difference between this byte stream copy that you mentioned and an archival copy that was mentioned previously?
Certainly. And I don't understand the definition of how archival copy is being used in this context, but typically what I will see is individuals will use a program similar to Semantic Ghost. It's a popular software package. And on the box, if you read the box, it states that it creates an image of a hard drive. Well, it's insufficient because commercially, generally, you know, as in the case with Ghost, commercial IT programs do not create forensically sound images. So what we would be losing would often be accurate date and time stamps. Any information that had been deleted would likely not be included in that collection. You know, certain system files may not be included in that collection. It just depends on what software is being used.
I know one of the concerns that's been addressed were issues like credit card information, personal data, credit reports. How do you go about, whether using this protocol or otherwise, protecting and preserving the confidentiality of that data?
Certainly. And in a case like this, assuming I'm given a list of search terms, I would run those terms against the data population. Whatever files would hit on those search terms would be provided to counsel, and they would have an opportunity to review it for responsiveness or privilege. I don't go through and read every file. I just have no inclination to do that. I don't have the time to do that unless I'm asked to do that. But, you know, I hope that answered your question.
Well, that's fine. Thank you. As far as data that's been produced, have you had an opportunity to examine the CDs that have been provided to us pursuant to the 26A1 disclosures?
I have not.
In light of the description that's been given to us about what is on there, do you have any idea whether or not that might contain the kind of byte-for-byte image you're looking for?
I don't. I would need to look at the disks before I can come to any conclusion.
That's all the questions I have. Did you have anything else you wanted to ask?
Before Mr. Heald crosses you, if the disks and that Mr. Heald and Mr. Joy referred to were subjected to your search protocol and they kicked out a bunch of files, I presume it's possible to ask to see those files in their native format and to get to see them in their native format.
Yeah, and it's difficult for me to comment because I haven't looked at the disks. It would really depend on what is on the disks, how the data was collected, and whether or not it was collected in such a way that it maintained data integrity. But thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Hill. Thank you, Your Honor. And you referred to metadata, and can you tell me where you learned the term metadata?
Where I learned the term metadata? I would think from my schooling or from a book. It's a commonly used term.
Do you have a background in Apple Macintosh?
Do I? Yes, I do.
Have you read the thought formats for Apple Macintosh? Charges?
Yes, I have.
If there's no... Now, you said you use a hardware write blocker?
Yes.
How do you do that?
I connect a piece of hardware between the evidence drive, or the drive being imaged, and our equipment.
You disconnect the hard drive from the computer?
Yes.
How do you avoid shutting down a server?
We run a ported version of DD over a network connection. And we do
that.
Yes, sir.
So
and we do that in a case, just for example, if we're asked to image a server in a hospital setting or in a bank setting, it wouldn't be practical for me to shut down their servers for 2 hours. So it's a workaround that allows us to capture server data without interfering with the business.
So you're running your software on someone else's computer?
No, that's not what I said. We're running it on our computer over the network connected to a server that we're therefore capturing the data from. We don't install anything on systems.
In that case, you'll have to have permission to access that computer disk as a file server.
Correct.
Can you tell me what GREP stands for?
GREP is a search protocol.
Can you tell me what the word GREP is an abbreviation of?
It's a search protocol. It's a program.
Does it stand for General Regular Expression Parser?
It may. I refer to it as GREP.
When you're running your list of search terms, you refer to an example of everything that contains insurance within 5 words or more. Mm-hmm. How do you encode that?
I don't follow you.
How do you tell Brett to search for insurance within 5 years?
Yeah, it's a GREP expression that we would enter into. It's an expression after running GREP. I don't understand the question.
What are the terms that you enter into the program?
Depends on what I'm asked to do.
Do I take it you have no specific knowledge of how to encode insurance within 5 words of me?
How to encode it? I don't know what you mean.
Do you know how to run the program that you're referring to?
Yes, I do.
What would you do in order to obtain a list of files that have insurance within 5 words of me?
I would run a GREP command against the data population.
I'm sorry if I'm in service.
We seem to be.
Could you tell me what the command is?
It would be GREP, and it's a very long expression that I would have to access notes. It's very specific. And I need to know exactly what I'm being asked to do, and then I need to write a very long, possibly 20-character command for it.
Would that command have a lot of asterisks and dots and backslashes?
Yes, it would.
Do you have any knowledge of the computer systems used at the plant of 3 of
you? I'm sorry, Mr. Hill, can you speak a little more clearly? I'm having trouble hearing you, which means that we're not picking you up.
All right, Your Honor.
Just a little louder.
I'll try to boom it out.
Thank you.
And I was asking if you have any knowledge of the computer systems used at the plant of 3 ABM.
I do not.
Do you have any knowledge of the computer systems used by the plant of Danny Shelton?
I do not.
Thank you.
Mr. Joy, do you have any questions?
Yes, sir. Let's see. 967 cases you told, right?
That's correct.
Is that what you said?
Yes, I did.
How many of those were civil?
I would say, I'm estimating here, I would say probably 500 or 600.
So two-thirds of the cases that you've done were civil cases, not criminal cases?
That's correct.
And how many of them were for this firm?
I think one other.
One other?
Mm-hmm.
Did you do civil cases when you were in the Secret Service?
No.
So all the civil cases have been since you have left?
Yes.
And how many of those were for U.S. District Court?
Cases in federal court?
That's correct.
I would say approximately 15 to 20.
And how many of those were placed post-Sedona principles?
I don't know. I would say most of them.
So most of them have been since 2006?
Well, no, the Sedona conference has...
Sedona principles were well before 06.
Your Honor, according to the notation here, it says the U.S. Supreme Court adopted Sedona in 2006.
The United States Supreme Court promulgated discovery rules on December 1st, 2006. Which were the result of the Sedona principles, which were generated sometime around 01 or 02.
I understand that, Your Honor.
I don't think you do, but let's have a question, please.
Okay. What I'm asking him is, how many cases have you done since December 1, 2006 in the U.S. District Court?
Since December 1st of 2006? I think three. But I would have to check our records.
How many of those involve this bite-by-bite imaging?
Oh, every case that I'm involved in involves imaging.
So you only get involved if you're requiring bite-by-bite, is that correct? In other words, are you only brought in if they want bite-by-bite?
No, I don't know what the motivations are of bringing me in.
But that's, my question is, are you only brought in when they're looking for a bite-by-bite transfer of information?
Usually, I'm initially contracted to offer advice because a lot of law firms don't necessarily have in-house expertise in electronic discovery.
So, in fact, how many of these three cases have involved a bite-by-bite transfer from a defendant's computer to the plaintiff's?
Every case in which I produce an analysis involves bitstream images.
Okay. Of the three since Sedona.
Right.
How many of those did you speak, did you testify to, or work on it, more than just advice, but actually went in and did a complete bite-by-bite transfer of data?
All of them.
All three of them?
Mm-hmm.
Was it contested?
You would have to ask the attorneys. I don't get involved in that.
Were they criminal or civil?
Two were criminal, one was civil.
Two criminal and one civil. Okay. Now, explain again, if you haven't looked at our information, what is it you're looking for in my computer?
Well, I haven't been told what to look for on your computer. So, right now, I'm not looking for anything.
That's exactly right. You're not looking for anything.
But what I am looking to,
Wait a minute. One at a time, please. Let's have a question, not a statement, please, Mr. Chair.
You stated that you were looking for names and files. Is that correct? What are you looking for if you went into the computer and you were looking for this second layer you're talking about?
Well, first, I would need to get some instruction on what to look for. So I can't answer that because I don't know. Someone would need to tell me what to look for.
So why would they bring you in here to request the opportunity to do bite-by-bite at this point?
To ensure that the data is properly preserved and that a thorough search is conducted.
Do you have any evidence that it has not been preserved?
I don't.
Do you have any evidence that it has been not properly preserved?
I don't, but if you have bitstream images, I'd be happy to verify that.
Sent you CDs, sir. Now, let's assume somehow you feel that the information is deficient here. Okay? What is it you expect to testify to at trial that would not be on the CDs?
I don't know. It would be premature for me to comment on that right now.
I think that's correct. It is premature, isn't it?
Your Honor, I've been patient.
Mr. Joy?
Yes, sir.
Let's do this. You can ask him questions, and if I need you to comment on something, I'll ask you for it. How's that sound?
Thank you, Your Honor. You said you were looking for timestamps?
No, what I said was I haven't been asked to look for anything yet.
In your answer to your own counsel, or to counsel for the plaintiff, you said some of the things that you look for names, date created, date stored, timestamps, and deleted documents. Is
no,
that correct?
No, I think I use that as examples of metadata information.
Okay. How would those be useful in a trademark and a copyright case?
Well, Your Honor, I'll object to that.
Let me stop you because at some point farther down the road, we may have the opportunity to have a discussion about the relevance of the discovery request. In other words, what documents they've asked for that you don't think are appropriate for them to have. But that's not where we're at yet. We're kind of laying the foundation, hopefully, for not for a discovery dispute. But so what I'm trying to determine is what format that each of you is going to make your information available. So the relevance of the material is not important to me at this moment, other than trying to figure out what format I'm going to ask you to make your stuff available. Okay?
Yes, I understand, Your Honor. However, I point out that obviously the gentleman here is an expert to address why he needs bike by bike. And so I don't understand why that would not be relevant.
Well, the question you asked was with respect to specific discovery. So the objection is sustained. You can ask another question.
What do you look for in a timestamp?
What do I look for in a timestamp?
Why would a timestamp?
Well, a timestamp could be important because if within a printed document, for example, if the document reads January 1st of 2005, and yet the internal timestamp indicates that the document was created in July of 2007, that could be relevant, or that could be important. In this specific case?
Yes.
No.
Okay. Do you have any information that leads you to believe that you deleted any documents?
No.
Is it sufficient to say that perhaps the first place to start would be to go and look at what we've already provided to determine whether or not it's what you need?
I'd be happy to. I have the CDs in my briefcase.
So do I understand that in your proposal, you're proposing to do this forensic examination of a hard drive, and then you're making it available to defendant's counsel? Is that what I'm understanding?
Correct. That's typically the protocol that I work under.
Okay. And who determines disputes over privileged information?
Not me. Not necessarily, you would be moving parts of files.
Parts of files, okay. But in some cases, you'd be moving entire files?
You may, yes.
Okay. Would that constitute a deletion to one part of the file or one part of the disk?
No.
It would not?
No. What that would do is that would cause the overwriting of data that had been previously deleted.
Well, how do you know it's been overwritten?
Well, because there would be entries in the master file table.
And what if it was not overwritten?
Then it would still be there.
Is it possible that it's not overwritten?
I really don't understand your question. Can you rephrase that?
If you don't understand, if we're talking about a defragmented file, and we're talking about the data has been moved from sector whatever, we'll call it X, to sector Y, in that computer, during a regular defragmentation, right? But it has not been overwritten by any subsequent process. Is that in fact likely?
Well, I think you're confusing the two definitions because I'll try to explain.
Okay.
When you run a defragmentation program, only a file, a live file, a file that still is visible to the operating system is touched. So there would be nothing to delete. It's just moving that or rejoining the different parts of the file. When that process occurs, if a file had been deleted on a previous date and parts of that file resided in a specific location on the hard drive, during the defragmentation process, new data or the pulling together of the fragmented file may overwrite that previously deleted piece of data.
How about the information that was moved from point X to point Y?
Okay, what about it?
Is that still at point X as well as being at point Y?
No, it wouldn't.
Why not?
Because it's been defragmented.
But in fact, if you went through and put in a search term, you'd find that document in two different locations on the second level. Is that not correct?
In that situation, that is not correct.
And why not?
Because that's not the way it works.
How does it work?
How much time do we have?
Simply ask, why would a defrag file just move from point X to point Y? Obviously, the metadata is somewhere in that computer, as well as the, what do they refer to it as? The physical file has been moved. Is that not correct?
I'm really having a hard time following. I apologize. I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm just having a hard time understanding the technological points that you seem to be making.
That's a very simple question.
No, it's not. It's a flawed question.
It's a flawed question.
It is.
Okay, then let me put it more specifically. If I defragment a file and I move files, and I have this visible process that I can see when it's defragmented, you're familiar with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I take an entire sector of red, right? And I move it and it becomes blue. If you were searching, would you see that that was a deleted file if it was not overwritten again?
Well, that would not be a deleted file because you don't defragment deleted data. You only defragment active data.
What would happen if, obviously, this would be active data?
Then it's not deleted.
It's been moved from here to there. Is that not correct?
Yeah, does that mean it's deleted?
So it's still here and there, is that what you're telling me?
No, it's been moved.
It's been moved?
Mm-hmm.
Now wait a minute. We moved from a sector, and we moved it to a new sector. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
Okay. That doesn't constitute an erasure from sector X and a rewrite to sector Y?
The operating system does not recognize that as a deletion.
Why not?
Because it's a live file. It's not a deleted file.
So you're telling me that that file has completely moved out of this sector to this sector.
What I am
it leaves no track that your metadata would pick up.
What I am saying Is that, and again, you keep...
I asked you, if this has moved from this sector to that sector, when you do your level two search, would you find that evidence where it had been moved from here to there?
Your technology analogy is all wrong. What you're saying is not accurate. I'm not willing to answer that because it's a flawed question, and I'm not going to comment on that. It's a bad question.
Who's that, Mr. Pickle? You have a lawyer here, so I'm gonna. If he wants to say something, he can.
I'm not addressing this.
Yeah, you are. If Mr. Heald's here for you, sir, and. Do you have a problem going on?
Yes. I talked to the gentleman that set me up here, and he told me to ask this at the time being. I was wondering if I could be excused for a few minutes to move my car.
Sure. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Keep moving.
It would find that file where it resides as a whole accessible live file.
Would it also find it in the old sector?
No. I am.
Is it your opinion that this request is within the Sedona principles?
I think that's for me to decide, Mr. Joy.
Thank you, Your Honor. Do I not understand you as an expert?
You know, one of the reasons that Ms. Hayes and Mr. Heal here, who are really good lawyers, didn't ask a lot of questions is because sometimes the art of cross-examination is not asking so much that you get yourself into a hole.
Okay. That's it.
Any redirect?
Yes, Your Honor, just briefly, a couple of questions. Let me scan my notes real quick here. I starred my... one of the questions you were asked, Mr. Lenneman, related to the need for using the permission or an access code to get access to a file. I'm wondering how that's done and whether that has any impact on the actual data that is preserved there.
Sure. And just so that I'm clear, that's only in cases where we're imaging live massive servers that cannot be taken offline. That's not the case for PCs or laptops. And the access that's given is the corporation's IT department would give us access to their network. And that does not impact, and we don't write anything to the server.
Well, if you're given access to the computer, couldn't you just run rampant and look at all kinds of data and information and have perpetual access?
Well, I could, theoretically, but that's not what I'm there to do. I'm there to preserve the data.
How is that procedure routinely handled in the cases that you've worked on?
It's worked out between the two law firms. But I do know that typically, the direction that I am given is I'm given access to the data. I properly preserve it. I'm given a list of search parameters. And my work product typically goes to the other side's law firm to review it for responsiveness and privilege.
You were speaking about the grep commands and the long language and data that would need to be assembled in order to create an appropriate grep command, having lots of asterisks and backslashes and dots. Can you tell me if there's what the relevance of the characters being present in the command would be?
Well, it just tells grep what to do.
Does it have any impact on the data itself?
Oh, no.
You asked a number of questions about your background related to criminal versus civil cases, and I was just wondering, is there a difference in terms of the protocol or in terms of the way you handle the data between civil and criminal cases?
No, it's always the same.
The process of defragmentation that Mr. Joy was asking you about, could you tell me whether or not any of the hardware or software work that you would be doing as part of byte-for-byte imaging involves the defragmentation of the hard drive or any of the data?
No.
I believe that's all my follow-up questions, Your Honor.
Mr. Hill, any
questions? I have one question.
Sure.
Perhaps kept short, but was made long with the defragmentation. When you're doing your search, do you search through free space on the disk?
Yes.
What's the status of the data from a file that's been made during defragmentation?
An active file that has been defragmented?
The data that has moved during defragmentation, what is the status of that data after it's been moved?
It's now a defragmented file.
Does it reside in free space?
No.
What happens to the data that exists on the disk when it's written to another part of the disk? Is it still there?
No, not in the case of defragmentation.
Joe, you want to clean up on any of those questions that were on redirect or request?
No.
Thank you, Ward. Thank you, Mr. Lenderman?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. You can step down.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Any further evidence?
No, Your Honor. No further evidence.
Mr. Heal, do you have any evidence?
I think I have to defer to Mr. Joy.
The court already recognizes the building, Your Honor. That's all I'm asking.
Okay. Okay, here's what I want to do. I would like, and I'm going to, I'll post this on CMECF, but I just want to give you a heads up what we're doing here. I'm going to ask you to provide to this court within about, I think I'm going to give you 14 days, but if you've got all vacations or anything coming up, we'll blow it out a little bit. But within a short period of time, I'm going to ask you to provide to me your proposed orders. With respect to the format of the electronically stored information and how you want to provide it. And I want you to include, but it's going to be including but not limited to, the protocols to be employed, the methodology for dealing with confidential information, and any clawback provisions. So give me your thoughts on how specifically you want to provide the format, what format you want to do with those methodologies. And then I'll take a look at it and decide what I'm going to do. Okay? Any questions?
No, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Mr. Joy, any questions?
No, sir.
All right. For those of you from Minnesota, you've been in our thoughts and prayers.
Thank you.
Have a safe trip home. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Good to see that bridge out my window, Your Honor.
Oh, and by the way, thank you for Kevin Garnett.
You're welcome.
Literally, you're welcome.
You're going to love Al Jefferson.